KALW.
The bay actually isn't that deep in certain places. The average depth is only 12 to 15 feet.
The government says deepening shipping canals in the bay for oil tankers will reduce emissions and drive down gas prices.
And critics don't think this will allow for fewer ships. They think it'll allow these companies to expand at a time when we should really be cutting back on greenhouse gases.
We'll hear about both sides of that debate. Then a woman who finally made it to Burning Man after years of being told she couldn't.
I have friends who've been coming for 20 years. And every year they would come home with pictures and stories. And it would always end with, oh, but you could never do Burning Man in a wheelchair. And I was dumb and I listened to them.
I'm Henat Baba and this is Cross Currents. Last month, more than 100 people crowded into a library for a public meeting in Pinole, a tiny city northeast of Richmond. They were there to fight a proposal to dredge the shipping canal in the bay, one that allows bigger, heavier tankers to enter the Golden Gate and bring their supplies to the bay's oil refineries. It's a move that oil companies say will be more environmentally friendly, but environmentalists think it's a huge, deep step in the wrong direction. KALW's energy and environment reporter Angela Johnston joins me to explain more. Hey, Angela.
Hi.
So first, tell us what happens right now. So how does oil get to these Bay Area refineries now?
Well, the Bay has five refineries. Most of the big names are located here. Chevron, Shell, Valero, Phillips 66, they're all here in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And oil comes to them by train, by pipeline, and in this case, by boat. And it comes on a big tanker called a Panamax ship. And you've probably seen them, actually. They're like these container ships, really long, but without the containers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so here's the issue. The bay actually isn't that deep in certain places. The average depth is only 12 to 15 feet.
That's shallow.
Yeah, kind of like one big swimming pool, mm-hmm. which I thought was crazy. And so the shipping canal in the Carquinez Strait, and that's where most of these ships pass to get to the refineries, isn't that much deeper. Mm-hmm. So there's really not much room to spare when you're thinking about these huge ships, especially if you have a full heavy load of oil, mm-hmm. which the ships haven't been carrying because of this.
Okay, so the federal government wants to deepen the channel so the ships can carry more oil.
Yeah, so the Army Corps of Engineers, they're like the federal government's workhorse. They were first authorized by Congress to dredge or deepen the channels back in 1965. Hmm. And then it was sort of funded in 2012.
Okay, how does dredging actually work?
Okay, so dredging in the bay takes place right now, too, for sand mining and just for general maintenance of the shipping channels. Big boats basically suck up the bottom of the bay floor and then shoot back all the unwanted debris into the water. Mm-hmm. So for this project, they say they'll put all the silt and sand that they suck up onto restored marshland. And so, yeah, the reason for this new dredging is that the channels right now are too shallow. And so ships are taking more trips with less than full loads. And they say that once there's a deeper channel, fewer ships will have to go back and forth carrying oil, and that will actually be good.
Because it'll reduce boat emissions?
Yes, and they say it'll save oil companies a lot of money, between $7 and $11 million a year in shipping costs, which could be passed on to the consumer.
Which could mean cheaper gas.
Exactly. But environmentalists say those benefits don't outweigh all the harms that this dredging could do. Mm-hmm. So the first is that dredging itself can be environmentally harmful. One report from the Army Corps of Engineers said that ship traffic and dredging can hurt endangered fish, marine mammals. It'll stir up heavy metals that have settled deep in the marine floor. Environmentalists say that the Army Corps hasn't consulted with the surrounding communities. Mm-hmm. There's this idea that there's more risk for oil spills because ships are carrying more oil. But really the biggest thing, I think, is this idea that dredging the shipping canal will just strengthen our region's ties to fossil fuel companies. Mm-hmm. And critics don't think this will allow for fewer ships. They think it'll allow these companies to expand at a time when we should really be cutting back on greenhouse gases. Environmentalists delivered a petition with 20,000 signatures to the Army Corps of Engineers asking them to stop the dredging.
Okay, and what's been the Army Corps' response?
Well, they say they aren't political. They just want to ensure the safe passage of ships. That's their only mandate. The agency's deputy director told the San Francisco Chronicle, quote, "I try hard to keep the Corps as agnostic as I can."
Okay, so what is next?
Well, there needs to be a state environmental impact review, and Congress needs to appropriate the funding. So this isn't going to be starting anytime soon. And the Corps also told the Chronicle that it could be a decade before it's done.
All right. Thanks, Angela.
Thank you.
Angela Johnston is KELW's energy and environment reporter. You can find more of her stories at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Each season, the Intersection podcast looks at a changing neighborhood or city through a physical intersection, you know, a street corner. Well, this season, the city is temporary and the intersections are conceptual. We're going back to Burning Man. First, a little history. Over the last 30-plus years, the event's grown from a few dozen people on San Francisco's Baker Beach to upwards of 80,000 in Nevada's Black Rock Desert, and it now spans nearly 5,000 acres of dry cracked land, the size of Manhattan below 42nd Street. The burner community's guided by what they call the 10 principles. One of those principles is radical inclusion. But what does that mean for people with disabilities? In this episode of our ongoing series, KLW's managing editor David Boyer explores where will meets way at Burning Man.
What are you looking for?
There's a Camp K-Viva that I've been trying to find.
Let's see if we can find it. I don't know where it is, but...
So I would head in between the people thingy and the...
Go that way and look for a big green elephant.
You look lost. That's the first signs of dehydration. Get in here and hydrate.
One of the challenges here is simply finding your way from one place to another.
So where are we exactly?
Black Rock City is arranged like a clock, with streets emanating from the wooden man in the center like a bullseye. The rings are in alphabetical order, and they're intersected by radial streets that correspond to a time. Most camps and art pieces do have addresses. My camp, for instance, is at 735 and D, but the coordinates can be hard to translate. Sometimes the only thing you have to go on is that the 60-foot wooden man at the center faces 6 o'clock. There are temporary beacons. The neon ice cream cone, for instance, helps me find my way back to camp several nights. But other nights, it's on the fritz. And the wooden man is helpful until it's burnt to the ground. Google Maps? Not out here. So people are puzzled when Marcy says she's going to Burning Man.
They're like, what do you mean a blind person is going to Burning Man? What are you doing here? Why? How can you understand this? Maybe that's part of the entertainment of why I enjoy going, because it confuses everybody else.
Marcy has retinitis pigmentosa, which has led to the development of cataracts in both eyes and severely limits her vision. She's been coming to Burning Man since 2004, so she's familiar with the layout of the city. Still,
I don't always have a perfect concept of knowing where I am, because mentally understanding the layout isn't the same thing as physically being able to follow the layout. We live in an imaginary city. It's like the sides of the road are imaginary. They're made up by the layout of someone's tents and the layout of someone's cars and the layout of someone's shade structures. So there's like physically no object that you could shoreline.
That's when a person uses the end of a cane to follow a curb or the side of a building or a sidewalk's edge. It's a way people with visual impairments navigate unfamiliar spaces.
But there's nothing at Burning Man that you can shoreline because it's all flat.
In the 15 years since she started coming, Marcy has learned how to be self-reliant at Burning Man.
You have water, a warm fuzzy hat, and a pair of leg warmers, a headlamp. I have a little tiny snack on me. So if you ended up spending the night on the wrong side of the city, it's somebody else's couch and the sun went down, like, well, who gives a shit? One of the lessons I learned about Burning Man that I think applies to everybody out there. Imagine that you are where you are supposed to be, and therefore it's impossible to be lost.
The Burning Man community is guided by the 10 principles, one of which is radical inclusion. But what does that mean for people like Marcy? And what about folks with other physical impediments? How do they get around? Because in addition to the navigational challenges, Black Rock City is massive. It's 5 miles wide, and much of the big art is placed several miles from where people camp. It can be exhausting in the best of circumstances. Now, imagine you're in a wheelchair or on crutches or just can't walk very far. Enter this woman, sitting cross-legged on a big green turtle with googly eyes. That's her wheelchair.
So can you introduce yourself?
I'm Rat Lady. I'm 64. I will be a great grandmother next month. this is what I do.
What she does is run mobility camp.
We're probably about 80% mobility impaired for one reason or another, and 20% or less able-bodied.
Their motto is radical inclusion by radical accessibility. And that's why they're centrally located in the heart of Center Camp.
This cuts down the distances we have to travel. And that makes a big difference.
And now the name Rat Lady.
I had service rats for 12 years. They would alert me to spasms in my neck and shoulders. Since I don't have normal sensation by the time I would feel them, it was past the point of being able to do much. They would feel those muscles starting to spasm just very minutely, and they don't like the way it feels. So they learn very quickly, if I tell her, she'll make it stop. So it's a win-win for both of us.
Wow.
This is her 9th year here.
And my 7th year, at least partially, leading the camp.
So tell me your Burning Man, like how you ended up at Burning Man.
So I have friends who've been coming for 20 years, and every year they would come home with pictures and stories, and it would always end with, oh, but you could never do Burning Man in a wheelchair. And I was dumb, and I listened to them. And then in 2010, one of them did something stupid and lost their driver's license for a year and said, do you think there's any way you could figure out how to make this work? Because if you'll drive my van, I'll buy your ticket. So then I really seriously started looking to see if it was possible. And I found what at that time was the Department of Mobility, which was the previous version of our camp. So we signed up and we came, and my first year on Playa, I volunteered 110 hours and I've been doing it ever since.
And what did you find when you got here the first time?
Oh, I knew immediately this was home.
Why?
My generation, we set out to change the world, and we did. But at some point, it took a sharp right turn and went off in a completely different direction. And Black Rock City is where we kind of hoped the world would be by now. And so, yeah, it was absolutely home, and that was immediate, and there was no question. And so my passion is that nobody else wastes 15 years listening to people who don't know better. So we make sure that, you know, mobility camp is out there when people are looking.
That's how a guy who goes by Action Wheels ended up here.
So I've been wanting to go to Burning Man for 10 years, and so I've emailed Rat Lady probably 10 times, maybe more. And they have a website that tells you, like, all the checklist for your wheelchair, what not to bring, what to bring. Like, everything that you need to go to Burning Man in a chair.
And how is your chair holding up out here?
My manual chair is doing great. I'm not used to using a power chair, so I have charging issues all the time. But my biggest struggle is drinking enough water.
So this is your first time, and what do you think?
it's amazing. It's really hard to express the amount of kindness and love that everybody has for everybody. And it's just awesome. Yeah. Yeah, it's just really, really hard to explain.
So why did you want to come?
My family members always went, and I just wanted to see the art and the, like, what it was like. Like, I wanted to see if I could make it.
Action Wheels is one of 46 staying at Mobility Camp this year.
We have campers from 18 to, I think our oldest camper was 92. We want Burning Man to be inclusive. One of the principles is radical inclusion. And we give people a way to do that.
Is there anyone that you've had to turn away because it's just too harsh or too...
As a general rule, we don't allow respirator-dependent people in camp. We've made a few exceptions to that. We had one guy who was a severely affected quadriplegic, and he brought 5 attendants. He brought a generator in case there was a general power failure. And so he was able to prove that he could be self-reliant. You know, we're not caregivers. If somebody needs an attendant, they need to bring them, because that's not what we do. We don't do it for you. We make it possible for you to do it.
What also makes it possible is that everyone who camps with Mobility has to work 4 or 5 shifts throughout the week.
My name is Katie the Book Fairy.
The Book Fairy.
And she is our desk lead, the magic woman at the desk.
My daughter brought me 8 years ago to Burning Man. I would not have come as a 63-year-old grandma on crutches without the knowledge that Mobility Camp existed.
Katie was born with orthopedic complications that make it hard for her to walk. In the default world, she's a librarian. Out here, she puts those skills to work running the camp's information desk, where she assists people with mobility issues, including newly acquired ones.
If you're one of those unfortunate people on the first night of the burn to trip over a tent peg and break your ankle, and you're wondering, what the hell am I going to do now?
Katie and Mobility Camp are here to help.
We have wheelchairs, we have crutches, we have walkers, we have knee scooters that we pass out.
The camp is not just about the people staying here. They want to make Black Rock City more accessible. They do it both by loaning out equipment to the walking wounded and by raising accessibility consciousness throughout the Burning Man community.
And we also have a wheelchair and a crutches obstacle course, so able-bodied people can get a concept of what it's like to try to move through playa dust and uneven surfaces.
The wheels lose traction, you can't back up, you can't see behind you, you can't turn around. It was really hard.
That's the point. The Mobility Camp hopes that when you know how hard it can be for some, you'll design your camp to be more accessible for all.
We're not looking for ADA compliance or anything like that. We're looking for ways that people with mobility issues can visit your camp if they want to. But we consider ourselves a service camp. Mars
is my name. And there's the service rat.
Do you want a pickle?
Yeah, actually. I do want a pickle.
Rat Lady introduces me to one more person, part of the camp's able-bodied minority.
This is Captain Billy.
Hi, Captain Billy. Good to meet you.
He has the wheelchair lift bus.
Billy thinks of himself as the MTA, the Mobility Transit Authority.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Early one morning, I catch a ride with him, Rat Lady, and a few of their campmates to Burning Man's, wait for it, pop-up airport.
Good morning. You have another flyover.
Awesome.
Okay. Is that all right? Come on.
The airport is far away. In the 20-plus years I've been coming to Burning Man, I have never had the energy to bike all the way out there.
Out at the airport, they gift rides every day. If you've never seen the city from that perspective, it's amazing. And it's especially amazing for those of us that normally see the city from about 3 feet above the ground.
Yeah.
Here we are at the terminal.
departures to your right.
All right. Thank you so much, Captain Billy. Watch those stairs.
Soon, I find myself in a four-seater plane with Captain Billy, one of his campmates, and our volunteer pilot, Paul.
Okay, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Black Ops, Skyline 5818 Bravo, 01199, departing for this evening. Will do.
That's my camp right there, right near all that fluorescence, right across the street.
The temple is quite a structure, seeing it from up here.
Yeah, bigger than it looks.
We're coming up on some really interesting rocks here on the right.
Wow.
36 Golf, taxi from transit to 23 right. So we're going to leave the city and go in for a landing.
Billy and Mobility Camp will also run more than two dozen art tours this week.
Tuesday through Friday at 10 a.m. After Wednesday, instead of the night tours, we go out to the major burns.
They want to make sure that people who can't trek miles on their own have a chance to see the big art and burns that Burning Man is known for.
A very quick announcement. The tour guide that I'm so fond of, she's giving a tour today at 10 o'clock.
Billy insists I go.
Give me your promise that you'll be back for the 10 o'clock art tour.
And I do.
My name is Bonnie.
I'm instantly smitten. Our gray-haired 60-plus docent is wearing a ladybug costume.
I love your smile. It makes me feel good.
Apparently, it's mutual.
All right, take us to the man.
To the man, James.
Ahead of us on the left at 11 o'clock here is the Pegasus. Okay, stop. Are we allowed to stop here for a few minutes?
In between Mobility Camp and the man, there are dozens of mind-bending art pieces.
Captain Billy, can you stop again, please?
You can't just drive by a 32-foot hand reaching out of the playa.
Do you see the hand?
Yes.
Yes.
I-L-Y. I love you. They have been moving the sign language of the hand daily. The hand is fully mechanical. It has fire coming out the ends of all the fingers, if it works. Okay, Captain Billy.
Yes.
Don't let me stop again.
Okay.
Take us to the man. Even if I say stop, don't.
The man is one of the few constants at Burning Man. An effigy was there in 1986 on Baker Beach, and 30 plus years later, it's still at the center of the city. But what about accessibility?
What things are newly accessible this year?
Back at Mobility Camp, I ask Rat Lady what's changed.
There's more ramps. The Stair Ramps to Heaven project, which is all these ramps that you see out on the playa as well as ours here.
And so somebody came and built that for you?
Yes. It's for loading disabled people onto art cars. The ramp gives older people, people with mobility limitations, more of an option of getting on the art cars.
For Rat Lady, like so many people who make this event happen, Burning Man is a lot more than a week-long party in the desert.
It takes up a big portion of my time, even, you know, the other 50 weeks a year, or actually 49 because I'm out here for almost 3 weeks.
This floors me. Until this year, I have never made it more than 7 days out here. And every year, when it's time to leave, I am a shell of a human. Rat Lady will stay three times as long.
Then we will go back to Reno and spend 2 days unloading everything into storage.
So as people with disabilities, how do you do that?
There's always a workaround. You get as creative with solutions for whatever your impairment is and how you get around it as you do with anything else at Burning Man.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And it's true. All around, there are jerry-rigged art cars, makeshift yurts, costumes held together with hot glue and safety pins. This is a community of MacGyvers, finding solutions and workarounds for all kinds of challenges. For some, that requires more perseverance, more ingenuity, and more effort. One thing that's shared is the will to find a way. I guess that's what it takes to construct a temporary city in the middle of the desert, and then make it disappear.
You can hear the entire season of The Intersection at Burning Man. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your audio fix or go to theintersection.fm. And if you've been thinking about going to Burning Man and weren't sure how to do it, check out Mobility Camp's website at mobilitycamp.org. They're always looking for new campmates of all abilities, especially ones with big trucks. And before we leave you today, let's take a listen to some local music. This is Aviva LaFay from Oakland. She's performing at the Starline Social Club this Thursday.
I can still feel your touch. I never knew it could hurt me this much.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Precious Green, Lisa Morehouse, True Gwynn, Marisa Ortega-Welch, and Christopher Egusa. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.